That is it. Week one of the NFL is done and dusted. I'm joined by Mike Carlson and by John Babb to talk it through. And we'll look ahead to week two. I'm slightly laughing, lads, as we're both just discussing last week. We said week one could be dangerous to bet on. Boy, oh boy, did that come true. John, I want to give you a little stat. We're gonna have some stats this year that we're going to take from the sports book and from other things. I'm going to be giving spread stats from next week. We're not going to do it for week one because you can't really take a series from that already. One sure. thing happened does not make it a streak. But eight underdogs won outright on Sunday. Five of those were on the road. Some big names coming up with an L. It was a crazy weekend.
Sure was, yeah, and I think what you were saying there kind of is reflected by some of the picks we made last weekend. Not many of them came in. One of mine came in, but I guess my best bet was off by a few points, which is quite disappointing to start off the season with.
Well, yeah, your best bet was, of course, Jacksonville, wasn't it? Yeah. I want to show you guys for the benefit of those listening, because we're not filming this week due to the clips we clipped up last week, all losing. But as you can see, I'm putting it up there to the screen. Mike, you have a tick to your name because you got your best bet right. And John and I have an X because any of you who are on the internet over the weekend, well, you've seen that Betfair decided to run my clip of Green Bay -3 as a big ad for the show. So every time I went anywhere, I saw myself. And I mean, obviously, I'm an incredibly vain and selfish person, so I loved it. Until Aaron Rodgers field, Mike.
Yeah. That was lucky. You have to listen to what you're saying.
Yeah, that was lucky for me because that would have been my best bet as well. But I switched, you know, because you took it, I then moved to the Bills Steelers game going under, which it did. But it was my best bet on the column, the Friday column I do for Betfair. So I have enough ignominy there. And but a couple of the other things paid off. I'm straight up, I was 8-8, which kind of reflects the way underdogs performed, I think. And 8-8 is not very good. But there were a couple of games where the unders and the Browns Chiefs over, the Ravens Colts, Betfair offered a great double, which was the Seahawks Colts, which a great double, which was the Seahawks winning and an under of 47.5. That came in. So that was very nice.
Mm-hmm. Someone's agreeing with you in the background as well, I think, Mike.
Yeah.
Look, let's before we move on, because this is going to have a play into, like, the end of last season played into the start of this season. That's why we said week one was dangerous. Most dangerous team, I think, that was viewed in Tennessee, who changed some of their coordinators and seemed to have lost their complete offense. And maybe a little bit with Green Bay, although Green Bay changed their defensive coordinator on the season, so I don't understand how that really affected Aaron Rodgers to the point that he decided that he was going to almost match his season-high takeaways in one game. They were the two that caught my eye, were Tennessee's change and Green Bay's change. Anyone else find anything crazy over the weekend? Mike, we'll start with you. Anything? Because, John, I know you might say Houston. But, Mike, what did you think was...
Well, I mean, the Houston-Jacksonville game was interesting because you had two new coaches, and it told you a lot. You know, between David Culley, the coach, and Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, it was just basic NFL football, kind of like, you know, nothing fancy, nothing. And then you've got Urban Meyer coming in with Jacksonville, and you saw Trevor Lawrence turn in a real rookie performance, you know, some great plays and some bad ones. But that one was fairly predictable. I think the one that surprised me a bit was Pittsburgh and Buffalo, in the sense that Buffalo's offense didn't seem to be any better than last year, and in fact worse, because Pittsburgh's defense played really well. And the Steelers, with a new offensive coordinator, looked just like Ben Roethlisberger in the playoffs last year. I mean, he didn't play that much differently from the game they got killed by the Browns in, but they controlled Buffalo's offense to the point where they could win with a low score, which is kind of what you had to do. And the other team was Seattle that impressed me, because Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator there, their offense looked balanced. It really was hard to stop, and it made Russell Wilson that much more effective when you've got that balanced Rams style attack. You know, it didn't look like the Rams, but it incorporated enough of that so that Lockett and DK Metcalf were really effective. You know, Metcalf, they waited until the second half, but yeah, there was a lot of takeaways from this, you know, and the question, I think you're absolutely right. The question is how much will they persist? You know, how many were just one-off matchups and how many will persist?
Yeah, John, we love a hot take here.
We sure do.
You know, and but you would worry for some teams. A, my fantasy team, which struggled this year, got to say.
I'm not too worried about your fantasy team.
Got to get together. We got to talk it out. We got to watch a lot of tape during the week, let me tell you. But yeah, some of the, so I think Green Bay should be a little bit worried as much about Aaron Rodgers' demeanor as anything else. I think, as I said, the Titans really, they were a team that you were like, oh, they could go far, you know, that they've got everything, but really flopped. And your own Browns, you gotta say they were, you know, in a tug of war with the best team in the NFL probably, and they showed up.
They showed up for a large portion of the game for sure. There was a big momentum swing kind of at the start of the fourth quarter there, and you could kind of tell that things were shifting in Kansas's favor. That's what it's like to play a team like the Chiefs, like you said, the best team in the AFC, arguably the best team in the NFL, although. We'll see what Tampa Bay have to say about that this year. But yeah, it was a strange game to watch. The Browns played near perfect for a large portion of it. They were really dominating with the run game. I think at one point in the game, they were getting about 7 or 8 yards per carry through both Chubb and Kareem Hunt. But there was a couple of basic kind of errors. There was a fumble from Chubb. There was a couple of other things that obviously that dropped punt didn't help things as well. And it's that those are the opportunities that if you give them to Kansas City, they're just going to strengthen their stranglehold over you and just eke out the win, which is what they did. Like, it was only a 4-point win in the end, but to be honest, it felt like more than a 4-point win for them. Such was how on top they were at the end of the game. But at the same time, there's a lot to be, this Browns team doesn't really want to do moral victories anymore. So a loss is a loss, you know, regardless of who it comes to, even if it is to the reigning AFC champions. But at least, you know, from the fans' perspective, like, you're not going to get this out of the coaching staff, but from a fan's perspective, it's good to see them in there trading blows, you know. This is a team that they've been building a lot. It seems like the pieces are in place. Now, there was, I guess if you're going to be concerned about anything, obviously, losing 33 points in any game is troubling, but maybe slightly less so to the Chiefs because they kind of, that seems to almost be their average score. But then, you know, the highly vaunted defense that's been put together, there's a couple of errors from some of the new guys, like John Johnson losing Tyreek Hill there for that 75-yard touchdown, which was a big momentum changer in that game. So I think the Browns have an easier task this week when they face Houston. So it's good to get that Chiefs game sort of out of the way. That's sort of the game you can learn a lot from as well. You can see where you're at, what you need to do, where you need to improve. And like I said, the Texans is a good game to move on to next because, I mean, hopefully Tyrod Taylor isn't going to present the same type of challenge as Mr. Mahomes.
It's interesting you mentioned fumbles because there were probably four games that were decided by fumbles or blocked. A block punt in one case, you know, where that made the difference in the game. Patriots, for example, Buffalo, Pittsburgh was another, and those key fumbles really hurt. The one team that performed exactly according to expectations, I thought, was the Lions, because Dan Campbell was saying, you know, if you knock us down, we're going to bite your knees off. We're going to let, you know, come up off the ground. So, which is exactly what they did for like the sneakiest backdoor cover of the season in week one, you know. And it was like there were a couple of games, I think, where the scores were you know, Denver was never in trouble. Carolina was never in trouble, you know, even though it was only a 5-point game. And in reality, I don't think the Lions were ever actually going to win that game. And I don't think anyone, even they, believed it. But, you know, to come in and cover was pretty exciting if you're Dan Campbell.
Yeah, a couple of them. We're going to bring in a new element to the show right now, something I haven't even told the guys about, which is Kieran's Oh Come On Guys play of the week. And this week's Oh Come On Guys play of the week goes to Carolina, who decided to punt to the New York Jets from the New York Jets 33-yard line on 4th and 6 with 4 minutes and 44 remaining in the first quarter, while the game was tied 0-0. So that is today's Come On Guys play of the week.
Oh, wait, I don't know.
Aren't you supposed to keep the opposition guessing? That works. Yeah. That's what that did.
Yeah. What about that fourth and, was it 4th and 1 pitch out to Matt Breida? where you're pitching into a, you're motioning to the pitch, so you're pitching into a guy coming up to cover it, lost about 7 yards. That was just one of those real head scratchers.
Yeah, there's a few. As I said, 8 underdogs, 1 outright, 5 on the road. And then also just a very quick mention of Monday Night Football, because a stat coming out of that, of course, was that the Ravens had won 98 straight games dating back to 2004 when they had a 14-plus point lead. So that's the first time in, John, correct me, it's 2021, yes? So 17 years since the Ravens lost a game where they were more than 14 points up.
And long may it continue.
Yeah, well, that one went according to, I think we said on the show last week, or at least I did, that, you know, the Ravens were in a lot of trouble injury-wise and stuff. So taking the Raiders with the points was probably a good idea. And everybody else seemed to think so, because the spread went way down from Wednesday to Saturday. But that's how it turned out. You know, I thought for a while the Ravens were going to win that one straight up. But and they had their chances to win it, even in the overtime again. But the fumble killed them. And then Derek Carr. It's so weird in sudden death overtime when you see a guy standing all alone 50 yards downfield, and it's Zay Jones. Yeah. they could have put a linebacker on him if they, you know, he just bothered to cover him, you know.
Yeah, quite the argument on Twitter about whether it was blown coverage or not. I saw I don't know how you'd say it wasn't. But here we go. We are into week 2. How will that affect some of the lines? Well, I can see already some of it, but I'll let you know the slate of games. The Giants are at Washington for Monday Night Football. Raiders at Steelers start Sunday off of the 6 o'clock games. Bengals at Bears. Texans at Browns. Rams at Colts. Bills at Dolphins, Patriots at Jets, 49ers at the Eagles, which we're going to talk about in around about 10 seconds, Saints at Carolina Panthers, Broncos at Jags, and then the 9:05 games, Vikings at Cardinals, Falcons at Tampa Bay, and 9:25, Cowboys head to the Chargers, Titans take on the Seahawks. The late game on Sunday is the Chiefs at the Ravens, got to stay up for that, and Monday Night Football will see the Lions head into Green Bay.
May not lose any sleep over that one.
The live game that Sky have gone with for the 6 o'clock game, or 6:01 as we have on the website, is the San Francisco 49ers at the Philadelphia Eagles. That's probably right, actually. The website's never wrong. Don't write in and tell me when it was wrong. 1-2 about the San Francisco 49ers. The Philadelphia Eagles are 8-5. The handicap is 3.5, and we expect a high-scoring game. We got 50.5. On the total points spread. So it's the 49ers heading to the Eagles, guys. Which one of these teams impressed you the most over the weekend in week 1, and who should we be watching out for?
Well, San Francisco. I mean, the Eagles was the bigger surprise, obviously. San Francisco looked like San Francisco. The non-injury version of San Francisco, and they played pretty well. And then they just, when they had that huge lead, they just sort of gave up on the game, and Detroit clawed their way back in, biting knees and thrashing up. But Philadelphia was a big surprise. Jalen Hurts looked very settled as a quarterback. You know, none of that like panic mode that you saw last season. They used their receivers pretty well, but most importantly to me, I think, was their offensive line played really well, and they ran the ball really well. Atlanta, who were at home, just, you know, looked ridiculous. They went down the first two series, they went into the red zone and came out with no points on either. And at that point, all the air seemed to go out of the Falcons, and the bird derby was basically all one-sided.
Yeah, they were one. I'm trying to remember. I did a over under in the 6 o'clock game. I sent it to our WhatsApp group, John, the 6 o'clock games, but basically one team let me down in my over under bet for the 6 o'clock games. And I think it might've been that Falcons Eagle game.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That was a strange one to see coming, I suppose. Yeah. With the, just to piggyback onto what Mike was saying, I think.
Piggyback away.
I agree with what he's saying about the 49ers, about them kind of doing what they do. But at the same time, it's hard to escape the notion as well that they're also picking up those injuries like they seem to do as well, because that's Raheem Mostert gone for the year now as well. week one. That's just a, if you're a 49ers.
Well, eight games. Yeah. It's not the year. Well, unless we're counting calendar years, which then you are correct with your assumption.
Yeah, it's eight games. He comes back, and in week 10, he injures.
Fair. That should go without saying. That's clearly what I meant.
Absolutely.
But yeah, still, that's a really bad omen given how injuries affected that team last year as well. And the other thing that I just note about the 49ers is it seemed to work a little bit, to be fair, in the last game. But how far can you go kind of using dual quarterbacks like that and you know, having Jimmy Garoppolo as your starter and then bringing in Trey Lance for certain sequences, or if you're in the red zone or something like that?
How many snaps did Trey Lance take in that game?
It wasn't that many. It was only about five.
Four. Four. It was four. Yeah. That's not alternating. It's not alternating quarterbacks. You know,
it technically is.
No, it's not. Alternate means first one, then the other. First one, then the other.
Fair. Okay. You know what I'm getting at there.
Like, we're being really picky with John this week.
Because the NFL has their quarterback and he plays the whole game. This was
a take that went around. And it's funny because I had proposed doing an article for Gridiron about this. There are a number of shared quarterback situations that have been very successful in NFL history. And I can rattle off eight of them off the top of my head, but nobody needs to hear that. The other thing was that, you know, it's basically the change of pace thing. And a lot of teams are doing it now. The Saints will do it with Taysom Hill, although given the way Jameis played, I don't understand why they bother. I think you'll see more teams doing it just for the change of pace, just to kind of make the defense a little bit aware that there's other possibilities. But I thought Jimmy G looked pretty good. You know, that's what he's there for.
Well, he always does.
But my question, Mike, do you think that then this is sort of an inevitable track towards Trey Lance getting this? Like, he's kind of the incumbent starter. One would assume he'll get that job at some point. But is that like sort of, could we say that like by week eight, he's the starter? Is that-
I wouldn't put a time on it. But what I think is that when Jimmy G gets injured, as he always does, before he was a 49er, he did as well. When he gets injured, Trey Lance will come in and he'll have a little bit of experience and people will have faith in him. So I think in that sense, it's a good protective move. I agree with you. I would think next year probably, you know, or maybe toward, it depends on how Lance plays when they give him more snaps. Yeah. But, you know, toward the end of the season, somebody needs a quarterback and the 49ers have 25 guys injured and aren't going to make the playoffs, you know, then they make a move, you know, but certainly for next year, they can save a whole lot of money if somebody takes Jimmy off their books. So I think that's inevitable. You're right. But, you know, why rush it?
Okay. Well, look, San Francisco are 1-2 to win this game. Philadelphia Eagles are 8-5. Handicap is annoyingly at the moment 3.5. Do keep an eye on that. It could change before Sunday. I actually wanted to know on the handicaps changing. I actually noticed the Browns one has moved from 14 to 12 in the last couple of days. So that's an interesting one for you, John. Total points 50.5 over under. So we're expecting a high scoring game. Maybe that's why Sky kind of picked this one to kind of showcase high scoring points bonanza, because everybody loves the over. Do we see San Francisco taking this and taking it by more than 3?
It's hard to say. I think if I was just betting on the money line, I would kind of.
We can do the money line. We can multiple it up. You know, there's a couple of specials on the Betfair Sportsbook with multiples at the moment. So
yeah, good point. Well, in that case, I would plump towards the 49ers. If I was, you opened that by talking. I just have a feeling that this is one of those games that could, because this team scored so many points in week one. So what was the 49ers got 41 points against Detroit, and the Eagles get 32 against the
Panthers.
So I think, you know, that's, you look at that sort of stuff on paper and it screams the over, and that's kind of reflected in the market as well. But I think I just have a sneaking suspicion this one could tip under the 50.5 line.
Yeah, I think the Niners defense is a lot better than the Atlanta defense, and that's going to be a real key there. And you've got, you know, it'll be the big matchup. I'm looking for it. I would watch this game just to watch Jordan Mulata and Nick Bosa go at it. I think that'll be
he's got a great story. I remember him even from the draft. He was great.
And you know, and they brought him on 4 years, and they just gave him a huge contract, which is exactly the wrong thing to do. at this point, you know. But there you go. But he, you know, he does look really good now. He's got great. We knew he had, you know, great athleticism for such a huge guy, and it's just a question of learning the game. And he does look, especially in pass blocking, you know, really, really skilled.
For the listeners who don't know who this is, by the way, we're talking about Jordan Mailata. He's the left tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles. Hadn't even put on an American football helmet until 3 years ago. He's a rugby league player from, is it Australia or New Zealand?
Australia.
It's country, and, John,
Yeah, that's so he's looking great, and as Mike was saying there, he just got rewarded with, like, I think an $80 million
something like that. They love paying early and often.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I believe, if memory serves, didn't they draft a tackle like in the second or third round in that draft as well?
Dillard. Andre Dillard.
Yeah, and he's lost out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's bring it back, guys, because shockingly, not all the listeners are interested in left tackles.
They should be.
You said money line. Mike Carlson, San Fran on the money line. That's the way we're going.
San Fran on the money line. What are they? It's got to be like half odds, you know?
They're one to two. Yeah, they're one to two.
Yeah. I would take them for the win.
Okay. Yeah. The 9:25 game we're going to talk about, then we'll get to Thursday Night Football. For those of you who are tuning in just as the podcast is released, which I know a lot of you do, thank you very much for always listening. So we will have our chat about Thursday Night Football. But the 9:25 game is the Dallas Cowboys taking on the Los Angeles Chargers. 13-10, the Dallas Cowboys. 8-13, the LA Chargers. It is 2.5, so it's quite a competitive game, guys, and it's 55.5. The over-under point score. So, Dallas, they came into the game on Thursday night, and we said we didn't really know what to expect from them. We did say there were a number of players that needed to prove themselves. They got high contracts, and they were coming into it maybe off a bad form. And, of course, there was question marks over the QB. The performance against Tampa Bay Buccaneers would have given a lot of Dallas Cowboys, and, of course, there are a lot in the UK and in Ireland. They're a very popular team. You would have been quietly happy enough to go down to the Super Bowl champions with a field goal when you look pretty good at times in the fourth quarter to take it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot like the Cleveland-Kansas City result in terms of what you take from it for the team's future. Dallas played better, I think, than most people expected them to, and they left too much time on the clock for Tom Brady at the end, which is a common mistake, but they were in a position where, you know, they could have won that game. And I think they'll take validation that they're certainly the best team in their division on the field now, as well as on paper, especially watching Ryan Fitzpatrick get injured. So yeah, I think it was a positive. It was a definite positive for Dallas and the Chargers. You know, Herbert is Herbert, and I think his ability to make plays unexpectedly, you know, where the defense is not necessarily giving them anything, is far beyond that of most second year players, you know, and I just get the feeling this is going to be a big year for him, which makes this a really fascinating game.
Yeah. One of the things, John, and not to really take it to fantasy leagues in any way, shape or form, because no Mike hates them, but I read a piece about some of where players went, and Justin Herbert was a very popular quarterback in the early rounds. You know, when you see Patrick Mahomes getting drafted early in fantasy, you're like, well, that makes sense. But Herbert went quick too. So there's a lot of people who seem to think he's like the sleeper as kind of one of these amazing QBs on the verge of breaking through.
Well, yeah, if you just look just physically, he seems to have, it's the blueprint almost of what Josh Allen became, because he's got that athleticism. Maybe he's probably not as strong a pure runner as Josh Allen is, because he's essentially, you know, he can actually, I think he's like the Bills leading running back as well last season, as well as having that cannon for an arm. So yeah, it will be interesting to watch him this year if he can take the same sort of leap that Allen did, where Allen kind of arguably started off at a lower floor than where Herbert is, because Allen wasn't great for the first couple of years. And then obviously he had that breakout campaign last year, and Herbert was rookie of the year, I believe, wasn't he? So I think, there's a big, big launch pad for him there. And sometimes you see this sort of happen when the expectations are so high that they don't quite go there and achieve it. But I think he's there. He's surrounded by a good team. He's got, you know, players like Keenan Allen to work with. I think he should have a big year this year.
Yeah, Keenan Allen had a great game. So yeah, Herbert coming out of Oregon, everyone was concentrated on the negatives, but in the last four games, five of the season for Oregon, including the bowl game, the coaching staff basically let him go. They basically said, run if you want to. They had sort of kept him in check for most of the time. And this came from, I think it was Mitchell Schwartz or one of the Schwartz brothers who played at Oregon and noticed it in the film. And he was brilliant those last few games. So when he went in the draft, I really was saying, you know, this is a guy, I would take him over Tua right now. And obviously that turned out right. Joe Burrow was Joe Burrow. So he was always going to go number one. But Herbert's season was just off, in my mind, the top 10 rookie quarterbacks of all time. It was a kind of a match for Matt Ryan's rookie season. And that was a pretty good rookie season. Now, the question for me with the Chargers is, you know, how much have they put around him? They got a break probably with Ryan Fitzpatrick going out in that game, which made their defense, you know, their defensive task a bit easier on the side. And they only put up 20 against Washington, but Washington is a pretty fine defense, especially in terms of pass rush, which Dallas, I'm not convinced by Dallas. You know, they tried to do that thing to Tom Brady that the Chiefs did, you know, and pinch him in with the rush from the outside, but they weren't good. They weren't really good enough to do it because they're not as good inside as the Tampa defense is. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So that's why I think this is a tight one. And I think Dallas getting 2.5 is kind of hard to move away from. I think they're even money.
They're even money. Yeah. Stepped away from
that's,
the mic.
That's probably a decent bet.
Yeah, Cowboys 13-10, Chargers 8-13, even money. The Dallas Cowboys right now plus 2.5 points. I don't know. I think it's risky to take Dallas because of historically they are a wow. What a great performance by Dallas. They, you know, they're back, baby, and the next week they absolutely stink the place out. And we could easily see that, John Buff, on Sunday.
Dallas
stinking the place out.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
We can hope.
It would be quite entertaining television. I wonder... There's still, like you kind of were talking there the last couple of minutes, there's still a great deal of questions about this team. But at the same time, it's really difficult. Like, watching that Tampa Bay game, that seemed like the two, probably the best sets of receivers in the league right there. Now, I think...
Gallup's out.
Yeah, I was going to say that. He's on my fantasy team, so that's tremendously disappointing.
Obviously, let's pour a bit of a drink out.
Yeah, exactly. But in this game, like, I think if there was questions about Dak Prescott going into the game, they still exist, as they would do for any quarterback coming off an injury, particularly this type of injury that he had. But the signs were positive. He got I don't have the figures here in front of me, but he wasn't wanting for air yards. You know, he played quite well in that regard. They definitely seem like a team that's going to put points on the board. Can the Chargers play in that type of game? Like if Dallas come out there and they sling it around like they did against Tampa, that's going to put a lot of pressure on Justin Herbert. And like, just a couple of minutes ago, we were both singing Justin Herbert's praises, but I still think that there's an inconsistency about the way he plays sometimes. We're still talking about Dak Prescott here, so both of them can be inconsistent on their bad days. But in this one, I'm leaning slightly towards Dallas because I think I don't know what it is. It's just one of those intangible things. I think they've just got more weapons. I still think that Ezekiel Elliott has to contribute more to this team, not just to become a viable offensive outlet, but, you know, the centerpiece, the core of that team, like he used to be when he was in his heyday. What is that, 3 years ago now? So yeah. I think it'll be a very telling game. We're going to learn a lot about these two teams, particularly Dallas, because they're a team I'm quite interested in this year. But having said all of that, I was looking at the thing. I think, again, I'm just going to go on the money line on this one, but with Dallas.
Okay. That's interesting. We'll see how we get on next week with that. And it kind of segues nicely into Thursday night football, because in our preview of the NFL, a show you can still listen to, we sort of slightly mentioned that we felt that Washington might be the best team in the division. And Mike, you hinted that maybe you've changed your mind on that after seeing them in week one, which I would call a hot take. But The Thursday night will help us out with that. The Giants are 29-20. Washington football team are 4-7. Handicap is 3 points. And the total points is low. It's 40.5. I guess that's really based on the fact that neither of these two sides looked like teams that could score the weekend.
No, they combined for 30 points.
The big one for me is that, like, straight off the bat, Washington jump out to me. I know they're going to have a new QB and who performed well last year. I mean, almost gained cult status, for God's sake. But the Giants looked so bad. I mean, they were a pack of shit.
they kind of were. That's, you
it's
know,
a very technical term.
I read that somewhere in a great book.
NFL.com.
Yeah. I think from the Giants' perspective, I think they want to, like, you don't even know how much it's going to help, but they want to get Saquon Barkley fit and out there. They've invested so much draft capital and just general expense and emotion into this guy that he was clearly undercooked going into last week. Mike, settle down.
I really should settle down.
Barkley he got 10 touches in that game. Mike is just dying to say something here, and it's one of his little snide comments where he just picks apart something I said. So
remember everything that Kieran just said about Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah.
Multiply that by 100.
And you've got Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. I think, it's hard to look into this New York team with any great sense of optimism here. They've set their stall out, right? Drafting in the last three years, like I said, the aforementioned Saquon Barkley, and then putting everything into Daniel Jones with the fourth pick a couple of years ago as well. How Saquon Barkley stuff is just, he's clearly a very talented back. Injuries, you can't predict that. So, I mean, you kind of give them a little bit of a pass there. But again, drafting a running back with a second pick is gonna lead to questions regardless, even if it's, you know, Jim Brown you're taking there. But yeah, this Washington team should adequately have the viable enough defense to shut down whatever it is that New York are trying to do there. But Saquon Barkley is going to come back. He's going to get back to form. Again, let's hope so for the sake of my fantasy team. But still, I think you won't be seeing that till, you know, week six, where he becomes an actual, you know, an actual usable, manageable asset in terms of a full 60-minute game. And, you know, it's going to be a hard season for New York.
Cleveland John puts the fantasy into fantasy football.
Mike, you probably know this stat, Mike, obviously, but Daniel Jones and his fumbles statistics, they're pretty shocking. Do you know the exact
figure? I don't know the exact figure, no.
All right.
But they're Jameis-esque from from Jameis's year in Tampa.
He's played 28 games and he's fumbled the ball 30 times.
Yeah.
That's quite impressive.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, he looks most effective when he's running the ball. He's a good scrambler. I like Taylor Heinicke, the quarterback who reaches the parts that other quarterbacks can't. But he was very efficient in the game that they lost to the Chargers. I think it was like 11 or 15 throwing, but he doesn't have a big arm. He's not a long arm. So that makes the task easier for the defense. But I just think Washington's defense is going to squeeze the Giants out. I think I read the Giants have won 5 in a row against team football, WTF. And I think Washington, I would take Washington on the money line in this one. I think that
how do you feel, Mike, about, would you buy or sell this one now that the Washington are down a quarterback? Cam Newton's available. He's got
history
with Ron Rivera.
I'd buy, but we don't really know what that history is all about.
Yeah, and, I mean, he got rid of him at one stage. Would he want him back in a different team? We'll see.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. You know, he could play Cam 4 or 5 snaps a game.
That's just don't start
as a running no, as a running as a running threat. But yeah, they okay. said they weren't going to do it, but. You know, let's see what happens with Taylor Heinicke.
Okie dokie. So we're all kind of looking at Washington, but not a lot of love for the spreads at the moment this week. We're being safe, conservative after what happened.
Yeah, I get the sense in a lot of these games, if you like the team, you're much better off taking with the odds and all. You're much better off taking the money line. There's 3 or 4 games that strike me that way.
Yeah, same here, actually. I had the same thought, too.
And it's always nice to just fit in a little bit of a promo. The powers that be love that. But if you bet £20 worth of multiples or bet builders on the NFL, you get a £5 free bet that runs pretty much every day on the sports book at the moment. So you can get involved in that. There are plenty of games that you guys will be able to pick your best bets from, of course, that aren't being shown on the telly. A couple of them that do kind of jump out will be Saints and Panthers, going to be interesting. Patriots and Jets to see if either side can actually get a kind of a groove going. Texans and Browns should be quite interesting as well. They could be your best bets, guys. But first, we've two more games to talk about, one of which is extremely exciting. The other one is technically a game. Kansas City Chiefs take on the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday night's late game. Should be an absolute cracker. Kansas City 9-20. The Ravens are now 7-4. 3.5 on the handicap, and the over-under is 55.5. We're talking about money lines and handicaps and all that. 7-4 about the Ravens. You would be brave to take them at 7-4, I would say, right now, having seen what happened in week one, guys.
The question is how much offense can they generate? I suspect their defense is still good enough to be able to hold Kansas City in relative check. And I think John was right when you say, 32 points, that's probably, around 30 is probably what you have to expect from the Chiefs in a given game, and a decent game. If you can hold them under that, you're in with a shot. But I'm not sure the offense is going to generate more than 21, say, which is going to make it hard to beat the Chiefs. Because
over under is 55, so you're talking about the Chiefs scoring 30 plus.
Yeah, and it's a good over under because even if Baltimore falter, if the Chiefs get 30, which they're capable of doing, now you're talking 25. So you have to really think that the Chiefs have to be kept. If the Chiefs get 35, you're almost there. But I still would be tempted to go under in this one.
Yeah, I kind of think that might be a little bit high for what we've seen so far. John, how do you see this one going on Sunday night?
Well, I watched the full Kansas game last weekend. Their offense just looks, they're not really skipping a beat there. They couldn't really, the throwing game, the passing game, that is, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire had better second half than he had the first half. They didn't really run the ball very much in the first half, and that kind of played into the scoreline against the Browns in that first half, that is. But again, it just seems like more business as usual. The Chiefs, great going forward, great with the ball in their hands like that, but still vulnerable to runs up the middle, runs out wide in the outside zone. And we all know that the Ravens are a run heavy team if they have any fit running backs out there. So this is a game that's sort of tailor made for somebody like Lamar Jackson to show what it is that he's capable of doing. And if they can disguise what he's, if they can disguise what he's trying to do out there, Kansas will have some problems. But again, just echoing the points both of you made, this Chiefs team are going to put up some points. I'm a little hesitant with the over-under in this one, but I think I think the Chiefs can beat the Ravens by more than the 3.5 points we have listed there at the moment. So I think that's my pick.
Yeah. Well done, John. Yourself a clap on the back because he's got off the fence there, which yeah. I loved. Handicap, absolutely. I'm with you too. Kansas City -3.5. Boom, 9-10.
Yeah, remember last week I said that the Ravens needed to sign Latavius Murray, not Le'Veon Bell.
They got both.
And now they have both of them. Yeah, it took them till Friday to figure that one out. But they
throw a Devontae Freeman in there just for the crack as well.
Yeah, an excellent player. Final game, very quickly, lads, because obviously we released this on Wednesday. You're talking about Monday Night Football. We will either be surrounded by listeners to hear what we're saying because we've literally called everything right, or we will be like, I'm not listening to what they said about Monday night. They got everything wrong. It will be the former. But the Detroit Lions are 4-1. The Green Bay Packers are 2-11. 11.5 is the spread. 48.5 is the over-under. I kind of made fun of this game a little bit, but I really only made fun of it because more than likely everyone's just going to tune in to see, right, what are the Packers? Was that just... They rolled into Tampa, and now that James Winston has new eyes, he is an amazing QB. Or is there a problem at Green Bay?
Well, if you lose by 38 points to 3, there's a problem, at least in the very, very short term, because that was just a disaster of a game for them. But I think thinking about this game, you can't legislate. Like, that was the worst game of Aaron Rodgers' career, and you cannot legislate for him that to be his standard now. He's going to significantly improve, obviously, and that's going to play into the hands, quite literally, obviously, of Devante Adams and get, you know, Aaron Jones and these things cooking. So yeah, it's there. You have to remember what happened in the opening. Do you remember the Tampa Bay New Orleans Saints, the opening game of last season? New Orleans beat, put, I think it was the exact same scoreline, if I remember correctly. I think it was 38-3, and then the Bucs go on and play tremendously and end up winning the Super Bowl. And the Bucs weren't even, they were still work in progress up until their bye week, whenever that was, week 7 or week 8. So Green Bay, it's obviously very, very early to be dismissing them. They're going to improve, and they're going to improve significantly, I think. And I don't think this is a game to be backing Detroit in.
No, I agree with you. And you know, I even think that Green Bay may cover that spread. I would wait to see if it goes down, because I think a lot of money will come in on Green Bay to cover the spread, and it might shrink a bit. But New Orleans played a brilliant defensive game, which, while everyone talks about Rodgers having a bad game, they played almost entirely man coverage from the start. And, you know, it was almost like basketball. Rodgers would look down and every guy had a man on him. And Marshawn Lattimore did a tremendous job on Devante Adams when Adams wasn't in. They kept moving him to slot to try to get him away from Lattimore. So I don't think Detroit can do that. I don't think they're in a position to do that. The one worry I have is that the Packers offensive line, which we kind of assumed would be like all Packers offensive lines, they bring in new young pieces and they coach them up, and Rodgers makes them look better because he gets rid of the ball so quickly. Well, he wasn't able to get rid of the ball quickly in that game because his receivers were all covered. And I don't think Detroit will be able to cover those receivers well enough. So, you know, I'm my first instinct right now looking at that was that Green Bay could actually cover it. It's 11.5 at the moment.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That they could cover. They could cover that.
Okay. Of course, Green Bay lost 38-3. And as you know, this video that went around the internet of me, if you had took them minus 3.5, they actually lost 38-2. So you're welcome, people.
How many points were you off there, Kieran? Was
yeah.
It?
Yeah, I really
the maths on that one.
I really try to avoid recency bias when we're doing that. You know, which especially after week one is horrible because, you know, there's nothing beside week one. It's all recency.
But recency bias absolutely plays into the spreads for week two. So
absolutely.
There's gold in them there hills when you see that kind of thing. And maybe, just maybe, that Green Bay spread is one of those knee-jerk reactions that will not necessarily come to pass. So guys, it's almost time for best bets. So last week I went first and obviously took the Green Bay one, which you all wanted. So I will learn from my mistakes.
And go first again.
No, I will not go first again. Hey, I am not having another Sunday of this.
I'm set.
John, oh, you're set.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mike, lead the way, Mike. Right. Oh, yeah. Watch Mike pick my one here.
I'm going back to the well. Recency bias, I love it. The Bills and Miami to go under 47.5.
Another under. You will.
Another under. God. Yeah. I'm going right back to the well because I don't think the Bills' offense is going to put up that many points, and I don't think that Miami's will. And I also think the Bills may wilt in the heat down in Florida as well. So it'll probably be a close game. Buffalo's giving 3.5 on the road, which to me is tempting, but I still think they can win that game, but I think it'll go under 47.5.
John?
I'm tempted to revisit the Chiefs and Ravens game and just reiterate the point I made there. I think I like the Chiefs giving 3.5 points to Baltimore in this one. I think Baltimore, again, you know, they lost in week one. I think the Chiefs have it in them to be able to put a lot of points on the board in this game, as we've discussed. And I think they've it in them to win this game by double digit points if everything goes according to plan for them. So that's for that reason, I think that the Chiefs giving 3.5 points to the Ravens is a good bet.
Okay. And for mine, I tried to do this earlier and I made a little error, but at what time is it? This game 6:01. You'll be able to grab yourself a nice cool bottle of Chablis, a nice bottle of beer, a nice soft drink, get yourself some popcorn, get yourself some Maltesers. Hey, mix that stuff up if you want. That'll make you a freak, but people do that. And sit back and watch John Matthew Stafford as he heads for a MVP season that he will have as he leads his Rams to victory over the Colts with over 47.5. So you can take the Rams, but for my best bet, I will go over 47.5 because I think the Colts and the Rams will go over. But I also believe that the Rams will win at 1-2 because Matt Stafford is the man. And that is the best bets.
I want to ask Cleveland John, Houston plus 12.5?
Probably not.
I wouldn't
think so. Like the Browns, even... they don't tend to blow teams out of the water. They can they can dominate games, certainly against a team like Houston, they can do that. But again, watching them even last year with defense, like there was a few games where they put up giant scores in the first half. I'm thinking the Tennessee game and the Pittsburgh game in the playoffs. They can come roaring out of the blocks, but they have this tendency to, you know, give away a lot. They kind of extend garbage time to the entire second half, so yeah. they can invite teams back into it.
They play down to the level of the teams they're playing.
Sometimes, yeah, and that's not a great habit to be in. And we'll see. Like that's one of the measuring sticks you want to see for the improvement in them this year, in the second year of Stefanski. But yeah, I mean. That's what did you say? What is it? 14 points, 12 and a half?
It was 12 and a half.
Did open 14.
That would make me nervous. That's, you know, more than two scores. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Okay. Not your best bet then. Thank you guys. That is us. A reminder, please do gamble responsibly this weekend and every weekend. Please do gamble responsibly. Don't forget loads of shows on the Betfair Podcast Network, racing, football, cricket, all covered as always. Thank you to my partners in crime, that's John Baff and Mike Carson, for joining us. Hopefully we have a little bit more luck in week two than we had in week one. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. And remember, good teams win, great teams cover. We'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.